Johnny Beckett, tenor sax, with a quartet that the rest of which is guitarist George Turner, bassist Michael Combs, and drummer Christian Schnorr. Here on Live and Local, live in our studio on FM 90.9. And Johnny's got a new CD out, actually with a slightly different quartet, or completely different quartet. And they're going to do a CD release party at the Iron Post in Urbana tomorrow evening at 5:30. My name's Kevin Kelly. I'm the host of this show. It's your connection to local performances, and that's the performance we're essentially talking about today, but also particularly this CD. Johnny, thanks for coming in and bringing the crew.
Thanks for inviting me, Kevin.
What was the name of that tune?
That tune is called Charity Stripe. That's a tune that I wrote some years ago, and the name doesn't really have any specific meaning. I just had to name it something, and at the time I was reading a book about basketball and referred to the free throw line as the charity stripe, so it just popped into my head, and that's what I named it, but it's just basically fast swing in C minor.
So you headed off my question already, you know, because I'm always curious about names, and usually I'm disappointed in the answer.
Well,
because it's something
sorry
like that. No, that's fine, because it's usually you got to have a name. But you know, I actually didn't know that that was called the charity stripe.
Some composers are very private about some of the names of tunes that they select. In most cases, I'd be glad to tell you the genesis of the name, and most of them are much more interesting than that.
Well, good. I'll look forward to that. So I won't hold that question back then.
Good.
For a future tune. So this is the opening tune off of your brand new CD, I guess. Is it officially even released?
Yes. The official national release was actually on April 8th. And so it's been out a little while now. It's available through CD Baby. You can actually get the physical CD. You can download it through also through CD Baby. You can get it on iTunes. It's available on Amazon as well. You can go to Armored Records. It's on the Armored Records label. And you can find links there to get it. Or you can go to CD Baby. You can search my name, Johnny Beckett, or Son of a Mother, either one, which is the title of the CD itself, and you'll find it.
Son of a Mother, also the name of one of the tunes on there.
That's correct, yes.
So Armored Records, is that a new label?
No, it's, well, I don't know exactly how old it is. It's probably 8 to 10 years old. It hasn't been around a long time. It's the work of Stockton Helbing, who is also the drummer on the CD. He's currently playing with Doc Severinsen, and he has played with Maynard Ferguson, and he's a fellow University of North Texas alum.
Wasn't he also at the University of Illinois for a while?
I don't think so, but he is good friends with Chip McNeil. So he does have some association here. In fact, he played on Darden Purcell's CD from a few years ago.
That might be what I'm thinking of.
So he has been in and out of town some, but he's a North Texas guy, Dallas guy. And the label is, it's a nonprofit label. It's just to expose, some jazz, some new jazz. That's primarily what he's aiming for, and there are quite a few releases, so it may be interesting for the listener to go to that site and see what's available there.
Armored Records. So how did you find Stockton, or how did he find you?
Well, we've known each other peripherally for a few years through Chip and also through Darden. He asked me to play at it was kind of a retirement concert for two of the well-known jazz faculty at North Texas. That was back in 2008. And so we got to know each other a little bit then. So it isn't really a long association, but at that time he generously offered to put any CD project on his label. And I thought, well, I'm ready to make a CD now, so I'd like to cash in that association.
What made you decide you were ready?
Well, part of it was because I had applied for a faculty job, and one of the reasons why they didn't hire me was because I didn't have, in their words, a professionally produced CD. And so that's one reason. I wanted to do that because it seems like something that you should have, that anybody should have as far as part of their works, their portfolio. So that's one reason. Another reason is when you get to my age, you start thinking about legacy, and you want to have some representation of yourself, something that you've created and done,
And what is your age, if I may ask?
I'm 51. I'll be 52 in November.
No kidding. I wouldn't have guessed. Of course, nobody listening to this program has any idea what you look like, probably, although they can find out easily enough. Well, we're just about the same age, and I'm sure I look a whole lot older than you do.
Oh, I don't know about that,
yeah,
Kevin.
Yeah. So, legacy. I haven't thought about a legacy for myself.
Well, in view of what I've done up to this point, that's probably one reason why I'm thinking about it a little bit more, because, my portfolio, my resume needs some padding, I guess you could say. I just feel like I need to do something. Also, it's a representation of my music, my compositions. So eight of the 10 tunes on the CD were written by me, myself, and all written and arranged. The ones that weren't written were also arranged by me. So it showcases some of my writing as well as playing, I hope.
And you've been writing for a long time, I'm presume?
Well, yeah, I think most jazz musicians plunk out tunes here and there, and that's kind of the way I've gone about it. I'm not necessarily a conscious composer where I consciously, I'm going to sit down today and I'm going to write a tune. Usually it's more of an organic thing that you sit at the piano or you're playing something and you think, well, that sounds pretty cool. Maybe I could develop that into something. And some of these started out that way as just a fragment of a tune that eventually were completed. But some were pretty much written all in one sitting, rather quickly. So it's the process can change,
When you write a tune, I mean, I'm always curious about this in many different genres, and I know the answer is different according to the genre, but what is it that you write down? Because so much of jazz, of course, is improv.
Well, it's if you've ever seen a fake book or a real book, you see a representation of melody and harmony on the, traditional music notation, notes, and harmonies are written in symbolic form. Like, for example, if I want a C minor chord, I'll write the letter C with a MIN or a minus sign or something like that. So it's shorthand. It's kind of notation. So you aren't very specific about the harmony. You don't you don't voice the chord out and expect an exact rendering of it like many classical compositions are very specific. Every note is carefully planned. There is an element of improvisation even on the pre-composed piece. So you make a chord symbol, which is a kind of a framework for harmony, and then that's to be interpreted by whoever plays it.
But the melody part, of course, is going to have a rhythm.
Yes.
And that typically the piece will open with that, and it'll show up every once in a while, and the,
right.
as they call it, the chord changes.
So. Yeah, the traditional form of a jazz tune is melody, improvised solos, and the melody again. Sometimes things are inserted. There might be an interlude. There might be a little soli section, which is a pre-composed melody based on the harmonies. That's less frequent. Oftentimes there's trading, four measures or eight measures with the drummer, giving a drummer a chance to play and going back and forth, having that sort of interplay.
And you might indicate on that on the page. That
certainly,
like that
yeah. And a lot of it's discussed, and sometimes things happen when you're actually performing the tune. You know, a lot. That's one thing that makes jazz interesting and fascinating is the level of communication as it happens. You can indicate things as a tune is happening, give signals, hand signals, or even yell stuff, or, you can communicate with the band in different ways. Plus, there's even more nuanced communication of actually listening to other players and doing and working off of that. For instance, if I hear the guitar player voice a harmony a certain way and I hear a certain note that stands out, I can find that note, perhaps, and try to emphasize that part of the harmony. If the drummer is playing a certain rhythm, I can grab onto that and, maybe play along with that rhythm or play against it, counter to that. If I hear the bass player, laying down a certain interpretation of a harmony from the bottom up, I can express, a melody based on that as well. So there are a lot of different ways to nuance the music that is happening at the moment, and that's in many ways the essence of jazz, is the immediacy of it.
I like the way you put it, that somebody can interpret a certain harmony, which is, you have to if you see just the letter of a chord.
Right.
And that's also one of the ways in which you can record a bunch of tunes with one quartet and then perform it at a release party with a completely different quartet, because everybody's going to put their stamp on it within the general parameters of what you described that you write down. Why don't we have another tune? We're going to do everything. Everything we're doing today is a tune that is on the CD, right?
That's correct, yes.
So what do we got next?
The next one is a kind of bluesy tune. It's called Goodnight. This is one that I've written more recently.
And so, since we left the question open now, you do have to explain if there's a reason for this particular title.
I think that's just kind of what, when I wrote this tune, that's kind of what it sounded like. It sounded like a closing theme to a late night show or something. That's kind of what, that's the impression that I got of it. And that seemed like an appropriate title.
And there goes a drumstick.
I didn't think it was that funny.
But I'm bummed. Yeah. All right, let's okay. Let's roll it. Thank you. Johnny Beckett's tune, Goodnight, from his new CD called Son of a Mother, which is out on Armored Records about a month now. And he's going to have a CD release party at the Iron Post in Urbana tomorrow evening at 5:30. And you're hearing he and the rest of the quartet live in our studio on Live and Local here on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. Johnny Beckett, tenor sax, with George Turner guitar, Michael Combs bass, and Christian Schnorr drums. And of course, we were talking about earlier about what a composition looks like, sort of basically anyway, from at least this particular jazz musician, and I imagine most jazz musicians as well. But you know, the other three of you guys obviously play lots of people's charts, and I wonder if there's anything about the charts of Johnny's that you've learned that has a signature that you can recognize, that, you know, that if maybe if you saw enough of these, you might be able to say, that's a Johnny Beckett tune, if you saw somebody put one in front of you without a name on it.
Well,
this is George.
That's a tough one.
I've never asked it before.
I really like his tunes. I mean, they're very... they're very original, while at the same time being very true to the jazz tradition. I don't know. I mean, I feel like they're very rooted in the past, you know, sort of like hard bop and, you know, jazz of the 1950s and 60s. Yet there's something about them that has a sort of a contemporary edge as well. But I don't know if that comes directly from looking at the chart. It's more of a general impression.
Well, that's fine. Yeah,
playing the music.
Michael, any ideas? I feel like I'm leading a class here trying to get responses.
I think George said it right. It's a continuation of the narrative, you know, beginning with you know, the commonly understood character of Buddy Bolden until now, you know, a trumpet player way back in the turn of the century in New Orleans, who's kind of given the title of the father of improvisation, of jazz improvisation. Buddy Bolden before any of the other New Orleans guys that are typically known. And this is just a continuation of that, you know, century-long narrative. So it's to look at it, for me to look at it and say, oh, it's a Johnny Beckett tune, I don't necessarily look at tunes like that. There are seminal composers whose mark is so strong that it's hard not to be connected to that. You know, they define the narrative itself. The best thing to say is this fits right along in it without trying to, you know, with being interesting to play. You know, there's enough teeny little twists that are subtle enough for, you know, musicians to understand in our, you know, interpretation of the changes, kind of thing, that keep it flowing. So really it's just a gestalt kind of compositional thing that I would look at in any chart versus trying to attribute it to somebody specifically. If you know it's a Wayne Shorter chart, then you know that canon, his contribution to the canon is so massive that, you know, if you do enough of this, you kind of understand that. So not to compare Johnny to Wayne Shorter.
Kevin, I'll be the first to admit that my stuff is fairly derivative. There's nothing really that distinctive about it. I mean, and when you're talking about the pantheon of great jazz composers that have kind of blazed their own trail, like Thelonious Monk or Wayne Shorter is a perfect example, have gone beyond the American Songbook and playing familiar tunes and improvising on the familiar structures of those tunes to actually writing their own jazz melodies and tunes, which are very distinctive. You know, there's been so much literature, you know, that has happened, and I think Michael was referring to that. You know, it's been many, many years. So I'll be the first to admit that my stuff is fairly derivative. It's not necessarily distinctive, but if I don't know. Yeah, I think it would take a little bit more for you to really know that something was mine or not.
I sort of assumed that was at least more than a little bit true, but just there was a question that occurred to me, and I don't know how easy it is to identify.
Well, I think everybody dreams of being that distinctive, of being that being that iconic, but in reality, it's only a few people I think can achieve that.
Well, it's always been amazing to me in any genre of music that, given how much has been written, that anybody can write anything at all that doesn't sound exactly like somebody. Mm-hmm. Interesting, though, that Michael mentioned Buddy Bolden, a New Orleans musician. You have spent some time in New Orleans.
Yes.
And I wondered if you can consciously say that your time there shows up in your music.
Not specifically, at least not on this project. But I love the importance of rhythm in New Orleans music, especially, you know, brass band parade music. Just the very strong beat, you know, emanating from the bass drum especially, and just the feel, the conversational swing that's built into the rhythm. It's almost like a poetic meter in a way, but it's much more intense, you know. New Orleans too, obviously, it's the music is and the culture are intertwined, and there's no place like New Orleans, so you can't help but be a little bit affected by the music and the culture of New Orleans. There's no place quite like it. You know, they're very distinctive. The jazz is very distinctive. You know, the street beat and all of that. The New Orleans funk is always also extremely, you know, very, very distinctive. You have bands like the Neville Brothers and the Funky Meters, and, you know, you have people like Dr. John, Professor Longhair, all icons in not specifically jazz music, but also very influential. You know, there are some historical reckonings that would say that the parade music has a very strong influence on what would become jazz and jazz rhythm. So it's really hard not to spend some time there and not be affected by that a little bit. And I'm really grateful for that influence.
And you got your undergrad degree there, what, at Loyola?
That is true.
Where are you from originally?
Well, I grew up in Springfield, Missouri, which is in southwest Missouri. If you go to Branson, that's where you fly into, is the Springfield Airport. But I grew up there, and I spent quite a bit of time in North Texas. I eventually got my master's degree there.
At the University of North Texas.
At the University of North Texas, yeah. Having grown up in Springfield, Missouri, it's kind of a jazz vacuum, I guess you could say. But I was really lucky that my first teacher, his name was is Kim Park. His dad was John Park. He's now deceased, but he played. He was a featured soloist in the Stan Kenton Orchestra back in the 70s, and Kim himself also played with the Kenton Orchestra. So I was very fortunate that when I was in seventh grade and started taking some lessons with him, he actually recorded cassette tapes of some jazz albums, including, you know, Charlie Parker and Sonny Stitt and some others. So I was listening to jazz from a pretty early age, and it really resonated with me, and that's something that I've pursued ever since.
And you started on alto, switched to tenor, at least as a main instrument, I understand, because either you liked being the frequent soloist, or your band director thought you ought to be the frequent soloist. I don't know which.
I resisted at first because, you know, I mean, no changes can be difficult, especially in that situation where you're starting to feel a little bit more comfortable and you've got your confidence and everything, and now the band director is asking me to play a different instrument. The tenor is like, I don't want to do that. I want to continue to play the alto. But actually, he was doing me a favor because the first tenor in a jazz big band is considered the solo chair. You know, he sits next to the rhythm section, and that's regarded as the person who plays a lot of solos, and that's the band director wanted me to do that because I guess he felt that I was capable of doing that. And
I've been playing.
I would have been in 10th grade, so I don't know. I'd have to do the math. 15 years old or whatever. So
15, 16, something like that.
Yeah. And So that's when I started playing tenor, and I've been on that instrument ever since. If you're a saxophone player, you know, if you play one, you play them all. They all have the same layout. The fingerings are the same. The pitch is different, obviously. But, you know, I have an alto sax at home. I still have my first alto sax. I have a soprano sax. I don't own a bari sax right now. But I could certainly play it. But this, the family of saxophones. Sometimes you get called for things and they want a different instrument. So, I mean, I still play alto from time to time, but tenor is my preferred instrument.
I think you were on the show, well, it's been a while now, once before, and with a guitarist.
Yes.
Didn't you play alto on that one?
I don't think. It might have been soprano, actually.
Was it?
That was with the Young Kim. And,
yeah.
Sometimes I play gigs here locally where I do play soprano quite a bit, and I also double on flute as well.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of fun.
Well, we just had Adrian Barnett in here on, I think it was last week sometime, and bari sax player, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. so we had sort of the discussion about the role of the bari sax, which is quite different and not a common instrument for somebody to front a band while playing. But I always love the sound of that. Just I think I like low sounding instruments in general. Johnny Beckett and his colleagues here in our studio on Live and Local. They'll be playing tomorrow night at the Iron Post in Urbana. The show starts at 5:30, and the Iron Post, run by Paul Wirth, is a great friend of jazz. You can hear jazz there many nights a week, just about every week. What would you guys like to play next?
We're going to do a tune, another composition that I wrote some time ago. This one's called Heads Will Roll. It's kind of a light acoustic funk, so it's a little bit different feel. It's not your typical swinging jazz. It's a little bit different. So
you mentioned New Orleans funk. Would this be one of those?
Well, not necessarily. It's sometimes you give an indication on a tune. You might just put something like straight eighth or funk. But even when you put an indication like that, there's still some open for interpretation if you allow that. I mean, I could certainly say this should be interpreted as like New Orleans funk, but that's not. I'm leaving it completely up to who's playing it, and I think that's the way it should be. So
probably this performance will be quite different sounding than the one that's on the CD with different players.
A little bit, yeah. I mean, they're all a little bit different, but yeah, you will notice some differences, certainly.
If you buy the CD, more on that coming up.
Okay.
Thank you. Heads Will Roll by Johnny Beckett with the quartet consisting of himself on tenor and drummers Christian Schnorr, bassist Michael Combs, and the guitarist George Turner. And we did hear Michael in a solo turn in the midst. Now, coming back to the notion of what's on the page, was any of that intricacy that of what you were doing, Michael, actually on the page, or the, other than the chords during your solo?
No.
It was cool.
Thank you.
It was fun. You don't see people working way up high that often on a bass, at least I don't. Least of all, that high and fast. Usually that's reserved to the guitar players or the sax players.
Well, I started out as an electric bassist, so the concept is there, perhaps, for that.
Which raises a question, especially for Christian and Michael, just because you've not been on the show before. George has a number of times, Johnny a couple times. I note that, Johnny, you're playing in a number of different groups of different genres, jazz and mm-hmm. blues and R&B and jump swing and some big band. But what background do you guys bring to what you're doing in jazz?
I'm kind of a late starter on jazz. Just like the last few years, I did my master's at San Jose State in California, and that's really where I started to play jazz. And then I came here. So my jazz background is fairly recent. And then they throw me in here at the UFI and this Chip and Friends. And that was a good time here for me. That was very good.
Are you from Germany?
Yeah.
I thought I detected a little bit of an accent
here. Yes.
So what were you playing before you discovered jazz for yourself?
I've always played in like cover rock bands for a long time back in Germany. But obviously, especially for a drummer, jazz is that's just the, I'm looking for the right word. It's the heart of drumming in many ways, of modern drumming to me.
In what sense?
Well, for once, maybe just the configuration of the drum set itself. And obviously, like in rock music, there's not so much emphasis on a ride cymbal, this floating sound, but much more on the backbeat. But still, it's all the same. It's really all the same. It's just to drive the time as good as you can. And I think that as a drummer, I really wanted to learn about jazz being a drummer, or else I would have felt like I'm really missing out on the main part. Like, where does this instrument come from? This is such a new instrument. The hi-hat didn't come about until, I think, the early teens of the 19th century. And like this whole setup, having where you can play the bass individually with a pedal attached, and you can play the hi-hat with a pedal attached, and then you move the time to the cymbal, and then you can play stuff in between. I think that's such a foundation for all of drumming, modern drumming, and whatever style it is, but it is the background to that. So I think that's why I wanted to learn about jazz.
Would it be fair to say that your typical jazz drummer plays with a lot more variety of expression than your typical pop or rock drummer? It's certainly my own impression.
There's certainly more opportunities to branch out, I think. A lot of times, and that might be the same in like country music or rock music, surely you have to nail the beat as good as you can and keep everybody dancing. In a way, and since jazz music, since the 1940s, is not dance music anymore, maybe you don't have to provide that foundation so much in jazz. And you can branch out in the tune a lot more. You don't have to keep the crowd dancing.
And probably the nature of dancing is that there's a certain amount of repetitiveness in the beat, so
exactly.
You have to keep that rolling.
Exactly. Exactly.
Michael, where do you come from musically? You indicated electric bass, but that could be from anywhere.
Well, my mother is a classical violinist, so I started on violin when I was two, and then piano starting at five, and then trombone I picked up in the fourth grade, and then I fell in love with the French horn, so I did that from sixth grade through high school, and I started playing bass my freshman year of high school. Just kind of, it's going to be in a glam rock band, and the likes of Dokken and Rat and Poison and Guns N' Roses and that kind of thing. Of course, the band immediately broke up after the first rehearsal. So, I just kept pushing it and pushing it, and I also ended up going to University of North Texas for a while. I've toured around the country a lot. And
at that point, playing jazz?
I didn't really fall in love with jazz until about 10 years ago, I think. I had pursued an undergraduate, kind of, and that's when it kind of bit me. Because I had to battle with learning the double bass coming from electric bass. A lot of my stuff that I did was just singer-songwriter or pop or progressive rock or some southern rock stuff, too, and some fusion here and there. But, so it just kind of, the attitude of, like, you know, I didn't want to consider anything else, so I just kept pushing it and pushing it. And finally, I started to understand it. And
understand jazz?
Yeah.
And the double bass.
And the double bass, yeah. It was quite a battle.
Well, you've hit my two instruments in that long list. I was a horn player and a bass player at one point, but never jazz. Something I've always felt particularly admiring of jazz players, probably because I just never had the aptitude for it. Maybe I just didn't try, but I don't think so. Some people do, some people don't. It's what are you calling yourselves? The Johnny Beckett Quartet? Not calling yourselves anything?
There's no particular. Actually, a cute animal name, I guess, would be good. But
the Jazz Pandas.
Yeah, the Jazz Pandas. That would be great.
We could do that.
Yeah, just Johnny Beckett Quartet. Yeah,
sure. Why not? Well, the Johnny Beckett Quartet will be playing tomorrow at the Iron Post in Urbana for a show at 5:30. Officially the CD release show, can we say?
Actually, I did have one CD release. So this is kind of a CD release part two, sort of. There were some people who wanted to attend the first one and weren't able to, so I thought it would be nice to have another one and also to just have a chance to play my music some. And of course, you had mentioned Paul Wirth, and he's been exceptionally supportive of this music. He's a fan himself, which is so important. He's been very supportive of me and my time that I've been here in Champaign, Urbana, different musical projects. And I've played, I think all of us have played in the Iron Post quite a bit over the last few years. So it's just, you can't take places like that for granted. So, I would say to anybody who's listening, if you have the opportunity to come out and support live music, no matter what it is, please do so. It means so much to the musicians and to the establishments, but also I think there's an effect that the listener has hearing live music that is unlike anything else.
On the listener,
yes.
and on the,
certainly.
On the performers.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because it's certainly no fun to play to nobody.
That's
if
true.
You're the performer. It's a whole lot better to play to people in the house. Well,
certainly.
What do you want to do next from the CD?
Well, I had written a ballad. It's the genesis for this is somewhat sad. My older brother had passed away recently, so this is somewhat of a tribute to him, and it's called For Daniel.
Johnny Beckett, George Turner, Michael Combs, and Christian Schnorr live on Live and Local. for Daniel. Daniel Beckett, I assume.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Written by his brother Johnny. And it's on his Johnny's new CD called Son of a Mother. That CD features, besides himself, of course, on tenor sax, guitarist Terry Hankins, bassist James Driscoll, and drummer Stockton Helbing, whose Armored Records label put out this CD, in our studio. And tomorrow night at the Iron Post in Urbana, you can hear, of course, Johnny on tenor, and guitarist George Turner with bassist Michael Combs and drummer Christian Schnorr. And very pleased to have him on the show today. Might as well give you the last word, Johnny, since it's your group and your CD. Your name's on them both. I mentioned that you're in a number of other local groups, that are groups of some standing. You want to talk about those just a little bit?
Sure. The most recent group that I've become a member of is Bruce Rumney's band called Bruiser and the Virtues. And it's a jump swing band in the style of... it's kind of like 50s rock, you know, maybe a Louis Prima style of music, maybe Louis Jordan a little bit, and some of the great musicians who played the jump swing style, what we might hear and think of as being 50s rock. It's an interesting configuration. There's two tenor saxophone players, myself and Peter Rubel, on tenor saxophone, and Bruce Rumney plays guitar. He plays a big box hollow body, old style guitar. And we do some blues tunes, and we also do just, it's a variety of music, but it's a lot of fun. Stylistically, it's a little bit different than jazz, but there's a lot of improvisation, and it's a great deal of fun playing that band. I'm really glad to be with them. I also play with the Heartland Jazz Orchestra. It's a jazz big band based in Bloomington, but they play around the area. Not too long ago, we had a big concert with Chuchito Valdez in Bloomington, and that was kind of quite an event. He's third in the line of famous Cuban piano players who play that style of Cuban music. I play with my own band from time to time as well, and different styles as much as I possibly can.
And you still play with Candy Foster?
And I play with Candy Foster and Shades of Blue. I've been with Candy for a little bit over 4 years now, and that's a great fun. I love playing in that band. It's R&B and blues, but it's a completely different vibe than jazz, although you use a lot of the same foundations as far as improvisation and, challenging yourself to do something a little bit different each time. Idiomatically, it's different for the instrument. You tend to emphasize different things, playing in the altissimo range, which is higher than the natural range of the instrument. And it's more groove-oriented or rhythmic foundation in your playing, as opposed to be more harmonically interesting, for example. You're trying to really lay it down in the pocket. So I've really enjoyed playing with Candy and playing that style of music as well. So those are the three primary bands that I play with. And sometimes I also play with a gentleman named Jim Markham, and he has a little big band that plays swing and jazz as well. And he's actually out of Pekin, which is near Peoria.
Yeah.
But regionally play with him some as well.
Well, that sounds like some a great variety for your own music making.
Mm-hmm. Certainly is. But my ultimate is jazz on the tenor sax, so that's what I'm going for here.
Tomorrow night, the Iron Post, 5:30. You can hear these guys live, the best way to hear music. I'm sure Johnny would be happy if you'd pick up this CD, Son of a Mother. Thanks, gentlemen, very much for joining us on the show today.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you, Kevin.
It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly.